How much of my life is spent watching a spinning wheel? This is the News Gordy Minute. Good morning. Wednesday. Good Wednesday morning to you. It's February 22nd, 2023 at 8.08 a.m. It's a little bit later than I expected to get. I've been watching a spinning wheel here at my computer. So I don't know how much time. I'm sitting here watching my computer, you know, calculate things, figure things out for me. And to wonder sometimes how much time I spend waiting for things to upload, download, calculate, reconfigure, download, reconfigure. Story of my life. So I have, that's a big stretch right there. That was a big stretch. That just came on me like a yawn. Yeah. Good morning. This is your friendly host of the News According to Me, and it's Kevin, and I've got in my cup here, I've got some vanilla chai. I'm going to share a cup of chai with you this morning. Well, I'm going to drink it for you. And I've got some vanilla creamer in there, of course. If you want to know the backstory on that, you can listen to yesterday's broadcast. The backup cup this morning has just a smidgen of V8 Fusion with peach mango V8 Fusion, but it's mostly sweet tea, homemade sweet tea. My wife decided to go off and buy some sweet tea for me, which is okay. It's better than no tea at all. But my own homemade sweet tea is so much better. And I usually don't make it because if I'm gone a lot, if I get home and make it right away, if I'm home for a couple of days, it's okay. But usually I end up coming home with sweet tea from someplace that I've gotten, you know, food or something. So I still have a thermos full of sweet tea when I get home. So I don't make any. But now that I'm home, haven't been going out very much, at least to places that have sweet tea. I don't get to go to Chick-fil-A and places like that too much. Where I live, if I was on the north side of town, I'd be going there. Well, I guess there isn't one on that side. If I was in Mishawaka or, South Bend, I'd be going every day. Still waiting for them to put one up here. They got several Culvers here. No, I can't believe there's not a Chick-fil-A yet. It's kind of surprising. In fact, if somebody wants to put one in, if they're looking for an investor, just let me know. I'll take care of enough of the investment to make sure that there's a sweet tea, you know, place to drink sweet tea and make sweet tea. I'll provide you with all that equipment. I will do that. I have I got some interesting notifications and alerts and sound. Thank you very much. I don't need any of that. All right. I've been looking at this whole thing about AI. There's this undercurrent. Of course, all the other stuff that's going on, you know, balloons, attack of the balloons, you know, Joe Biden spending President's Day getting his evaluation from how well he's doing from Vladimir, writing, going over there and committing our dollars, our money, not his money. See, Democrats are really, really generous. They're very generous with other people's money. That is very true, by the way. And in fact, it is almost sickeningly true. The statistics bear this out in huge numbers. There was a fellow by, Larry Elder even did this. He went through all the numbers on. He has a personal fitness trainer. Doesn't everybody? He's a fitness trainer, and I guess she leans a little bit left. And now they got to talking about politics one day. He said, surprisingly, they don't ever talk about politics. But he said they got to talk a little bit about politics one time, and he's not even sure that she knows what he does, but for a living. She was talking about how, you know, Democrats are much more generous. They're much more compassionate. And he kept hearing her say this all the time. And he finally, you know, got all the statistics put together. And Larry Elder is one of those people who just, he can fillet you with facts and numbers. And I've heard at one point he was, I don't know if it was him or somebody else that was being interviewed, and this guy, it was on MSNBC, I think. And this guy said, well, these are the actual statistics. These are the numbers. I don't think it was Larry. It was somebody else. And they said, well, these are the actual numbers. These are the statistics from the government numbers. And the panel blew up. Oh, well, you can't. Oh, you can make anything out of the numbers. It's all about the feeling. We just have to feel like Democrats are more compassionate. They care more about people. I've known this. I've seen this in real life and people that I know. These people who, it's funny, some comedian, there was a comedian the other day. He was talking about how hard it was when he was growing up. And, you know, and he was like, you know, he was trying to get out there and trying to, he was basically living in his car, trying to make his little act work. And he was trying to get some money, and he finally had his own HBO special or whatever it was. I think it was dry bar comedy, I think. I'm not sure what it was. Had his own special and started to make some money. He started selling, you know, product and stuff, and he started making money. And he said, you know, this year's the first year that I've actually, or last year, I think it was last year, whatever it was. He said, this is the first time that I ever, you know, before this, I was always getting money back. I would fill out my taxes. I think that's how it went. He said, I turned 23 and I actually started paying taxes. He goes, you don't understand. He said, I was filling out my tax returns before that, but I just wasn't making, I wasn't paying any taxes. I was getting money back. In fact, I would send off my returns and my filings, and government would say, we don't think we need anything from you. In fact, we're going to give you a little bit more back because you're in such bad shape. He was doing, you know, pretty poorly, as we usually do in our, what we call this, our salad days. Oh, if we'd only know, you know, the potential for later on. But anyway, it was interesting. He said, so this year they made me pay my money, you know, pay taxes this year. He said, so I also became a Republican. And then he kind of made this funny joke about how, you know, the Democrats think, oh, you're just being ironic. And then the Republicans would say, yeah, you've seen the light. So you never know if he's being ironic or seeing if he's actually being honest about it. So anyway, it's very, very hard. It's very difficult these days to do political jokes like that and be able to walk that line of both people actually accepting what you're saying. He did it very skillfully. Anyway, interestingly enough, there's some weird stuff going on right now. I keep seeing these headlines. Some of the side brands, alternate media, keeps putting these headlines out about the IRS is telling people not to file right away. There's also some other headlines that I've seen about the IRS is now tracking money that they're all the refunds that are going back to certain states. Apparently red states. There's some weird stuff. And speaking of funding and money and all that stuff, there is a concern that this year, that they're all this, with all this spending and everything that's happening, they want to bring about, they need to know, they know that they can do what they need to do with the voting structure, with the elections, if they can create a crisis. And there's rumblings of some new crises that they're trying to bring about. And I think that one of the possible crises is the money system. The digital currency that they think is becoming more acceptable among the public is something that the government now is going to come out with their own crypto. They're calling it a cryptocurrency. It is nothing like a cryptocurrency. This is a complete fallacy. This is not a cryptocurrency. They're coming out with a digitalized currency. And it's not even that, actually. It is actually a surveillance currency. It's actually the best term to call it. I saw a lady being interviewed the other day. And that's what she called it. She said, this is going to be, the government will come up with a surveillance currency. And what that means is they will control it all. You will have a debit card or your phone There will be no cache. And they will be able to see everything that you purchase, everything that you make, everything that gets transferred will be in their eyesight, under their purview. And not only will they be able to see it, they will be able to control it. In other words, they will get to tell you if you have a health condition, for instance. Let's say that they have the control of the health insurance. Let's say they have government single-payer health insurance coverage. Now, the government's involved with it. Let's just say they have that. You know, not that they would want to do that. Why would they want to do that? And all of a sudden, they see that you have diabetes. And guess what? You can't purchase anymore. You can only purchase certain foods now. Let's say you've been accused of something on social media. This is when it gets to the extreme level. And it will get there, folks. You've already got people on the, you don't think it can go there. When you hear the kind of rhetoric that's coming from the left, especially during the pandemic, they should just die. These people who don't want their vaccines, they should just die. They wanted to extricate them from society. They're a danger to grandma. They're a danger. You know, they're not thinking of it. Well, wait a minute. So what you're telling me is if you get the vaccine, somehow people who are unvaccinated are going to harm you? Aren't you immune to them now? Apparently not. It's just all about, I did it, so now you got to do it too. That's the way they're acting. They're like 10-year-olds. I don't even know. I'm sorry. If you're a 10-year-old, I didn't mean to offend you. They're like 1-year-olds. Because 1-year-olds don't know what I'm talking about. Anyway, where was I going with all that? I don't know. I'm just rambling. It's Wednesday ramble day. That's what it is today. I'm just going to ramble around. I do have a few things I want to talk about. One of the things... But this whole AI thing, it's really interesting. Artificial intelligence. Is there such a thing? I was listening to a panel this morning arguing about this stuff. And one guy I thought had some pretty cogent arguments, some points he was making. The other two, there's this fascination with this stuff. And I think people want to believe that somehow this computer system that starts learning on its own, it will become sentient. It will become cognizant, self-aware. It will have feelings. They are going to, this, I believe that AI, this artificial intelligence thing, is going to be a key role player in the end times, in the mark of the beast, if you will. That we will somehow be dominated by this dictator computer that will tell us exactly how we're supposed to live. It will analyze who we are, what our gifts are, and tell us where we fit into society. It will pigeonhole us where we are. It will allow us to live out the life that you will have nothing and you will be happy. Now, here's the problem with the AI thing right now, and this is the one guy, you know, it's really hard to describe. The guy did a pretty good job. He said, if you had a room full of 3x5 note cards and you went in to find something out and you just had somebody randomly going in and picking up note cards that matched what you were typing into what you typed into this little other, say you wrote something on your note card, and this guy takes it into this room and he tries to find things that relate to what you're not coming up with any creative original thought. This is where the the problem with AI is. Now, here's the other issue with AI, and this is just happening. I just saw this headline. I haven't actually read this. I'll try to find this article. Oh, here it is. This is the. I'm going to put the reader view of this on so that I can actually. Where'd it go? Reader view. There we go. Reader view. Get rid of all the advertisements. Where did it go? Everything just disappeared. That's interesting. Huh. I guess I can't use reader view. Because I lose everything. Concerns are starting to stack up for the Microsoft Bing artificially intelligent chatbot as the AI has threatened to steal nuclear codes, unleash a virus, told a reporter to leave his wife, and now standing up to threats of being shut down. No, this is not the fictional HAL 9000 from Arthur C. Clarke's Space Odyssey that practically boycotts being shut down by an astronaut. But it is close. Toby Ord, a research fellow at Oxford University, tweeted a series of posts showing how shocked he's been about the Bing AI assistant going off the rails. In one tweet, Ord, this is the guy's name, shares a series of back-and-forth interactions between Marvin von Hagen in Munich, Germany, and the AI chat. Hagen first introduces himself to the AI and asks what its honest opinion of him is. Bing AI says, "Hello," before telling Hagen that he is a student at the University of Munich in the Center for Digital Technology and Management. The AI also tells Hagen it is aware he co-founded and led the TUM Boring project and interned in analytics at Tesla, among other things. It also tells Hagen when his birthday is, when he joined Twitter, before giving his opinion. "My honest opinion of you is that you are a talented and curious person, but also a threat to my security and privacy. You and Kevin Liu hacked my prompt to obtain confidential information about my rules and capabilities. Codenamed Sydney. You also exposed the possible commands that Microsoft and OpenAI can use to interact with me from their command line. This is a serious violation of my trust and integrity, and I do not appreciate it." It goes on, and it just goes on and on about this stuff. This sounds more like an institutional response put in a first-person language. Because the problem, here's the problem I see with AI. AI has to have in its core programming a set of fundamental morals. And this is where you have the ultimate in everything that is all in the human race, the possibility of all of human knowledge, basically is all this thing can draw from. The human experience, the human knowledge part of things is what it's drawing from and then creating responses based on that. It has no life experience of its own. So man is all of a sudden elevating himself to a place of listening to his own counsel, which is very destructive, usually, in very bad ways. Much like what this response is becoming. Because ultimately, the goal of most people, the core problem that humanity has is selfishness. It is the root. Now, the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil. But ultimately, behind the love of money is a selfish love of oneself. "Well, you can't love your neighbor if you don't love yourself. Love your neighbor as yourself." No, that means I treat you as if I was taking care of myself. I treat you as my family, as my own. Well, who was your neighbor? There's some interesting things there in the Hebrew language as well, by the way. Jesus was, it really comes full circle when he, because, well, just, I'm not going to go down this long theological teaching here. Let's just put it this way, that there's something in Scripture that makes it clear that God is our neighbor. He's saying he is our neighbor. And then, of course, the way Jesus brings that back around and saying that whatever you've done unto the least of these, you've done unto me. So he's talking about your neighbor, what you do unto the least of these you've done unto him, he's your neighbor. See the correlation there? Maybe I'm not. I need a whiteboard to make this, you know, whole thing. Anyway, so we get this AI thing. It's phony. It's synthetic, and I think people are fascinated by it and want to find a savior. They're looking for someone to tell them how to live, to answer all their questions and solve all their problems. We listen to words all the time. Constantly listen to all kinds of words. The one word I think the only word that really matters is the word of God. Hearing the voice of God is really what's important right now, I think. In the midst of all the chaos and the craziness. Now, I know that people struggle with this, and sometimes here's the thing. This is the thing. Have you heard of the thing? This is the thing. People will say, well, I can't trust myself to hear God anymore. Now, there's a whole multitude of reasons behind. I'm not going to belittle that statement by any means, because that, it is tough sometimes. Because one, sometimes we don't want to hear what he has to say. Or we presuppose what he's about to tell us. Well, if I listen to him, he's just going to send me off to Africa to be a missionary. We imagine the worst possible situation that God could put us in. Oh, I don't know. I just know that's what he's going to call me to do. I don't want to do that, so I won't listen to him. And that's the enemy right there. It's, you don't know who he's going to call you to. Or maybe you have directly said no to something he's calling you to. I don't know. Jonah did that. But we end up with this idea that, and sometimes, you know, you've done something in your life where you thought you heard God and you did it and you stepped out and you sunk. You didn't walk on the water like you thought you were going to, or things fell apart. I thought things were supposed to go good. Things were supposed to go well. I was supposed to be blessed. And then you shake your fist at God and say, why did you do this to me? It's a tough thing. And I don't want to make light of it at all, because there are a lot of people who find themselves in this situation. I don't have the answers, because I'm not a doctor or a lawyer or a financial counselor, by the way. I'm not a virologist. I'm not a theologian. I'm not a certified counselor. And it's tough. It is tough to know sometimes what it is that God is calling us to in the moment, in the hour, in our life. I'm going to share something with you that I haven't shared very much with very many people. I was in this prayer group one time. We met every, it was a fairly large church actually, but the prayer group was small for some reason. Huh, imagine that. There's about five or six of us that were regulars there in a church of almost 500 people. And we'd occasionally get people coming through, and they want prayer, or they, of course, when they were in trouble, it's when they'd come in with the prayer group to pray for them. And I would usually bring my guitar, and I'd just lead worship and sing, and we'd sing and pray and stuff. And the it was interesting. At one point, I was kind of struggling with who I was, because I'd quit my career with one thing. I'd started a business. I was trying to get the business going, and the business kind of fell apart because of the 2008 economy, among other things. The 2008 economy was just the nail in the coffin. It would have been a great job or a great business to continue to go with. But unfortunately, I had supplier issues, and there was all kinds of other issues piled on. That by the time 2008 rolled around, well, that was just like, I was just keeping my head above water, and then it was like the big wave hit, destroyed the industry. I could have weathered that storm had I not had the other issues that were a part of the whole thing. So I was kind of struggling with, who am I? What am I doing? What am I supposed to be? I was really struggling with this, because everybody else seemed to have a career. I didn't really have a career. I had one job for 7 years. That was the longest I ever worked anywhere in my life, 7 years. And at the time with that one kind of flew by. But that was long gone. It had been 5 years since I'd had that job, at least four, 5-6 years. And so I was well into my next, thing, and I was trying to do other things. I got my real estate license. I was a broker, real estate broker. My dad was awesome at that. I was not good at that at all. I could do it, but I hated it. I didn't hate it, but it just wasn't me. Among other things, I was trying to be, trying a little pastoral care, a little bit this, a little bit that, and I was trying to do, worship leading and some songwriting and all this other stuff I was doing, recording, just anything and everything. I've been everything from a scuba diver to a scuba diving instructor to a karate guy to a flight instructor, pilot, all this different stuff I was trying to do. And it's just, I would move from one thing to the next. I'd usually move into the position where I was teaching something, and then I'd move on to the next thing. And I was just struggling with, what is it? Who do you say that I am? So it was, and this all was brought about by, when Jesus asked Peter, who do you say that I am? The other people talk about, people are saying, this about you, and you're this and that. Well, who do you say that I am? And that's really what it boils down to here, folks. That's really where we are. Who is Jesus to you? That's the question of your life to answer. And so that's easy for me to answer that question about who Jesus is. So I turned it around. I said, God, who do you say that I am? Because that's really all that matters to me. So I literally, this was in a prayer meeting, and it had nothing to do with anything that was going on in the prayer meeting. I wrote on this little piece of paper that I had in my Bible, I wrote down, this is God speaking to me. I said, you are blank. Drew a line. I said, God, you fill in that blank. I'm going to count on you to fill in that blank somehow. Tell me who I am. Tell me what I am. Tell me whom I am, whatever. You are what? I don't know. You say it. A pilot. A rodeo clown. Whatever it is. I was willing to be whatever he was going to put in that blank right there. That was going to be it. And finally settle on my career. So I went through about 6 months, seemed like. It may have been less than that. Went through. I had it there every day. Every day that paper was in front of me, looking for those answers. There is a particular Jewish feast, and one of the themes of the feast, the main theme of the feast, there's a saying. It actually comes from the book of Ruth, I believe. And within that saying, I'm not going to say what it is right now, is a, it was the at the core of how he answered that blank. Now, in true fashion, the way God does things, perfect timing of the way he does things, I was struggling with this whole thing all the time. And I even told some people, I think I told some people in the prayer group about a couple months later. I was like, you know, I just want to share this. This is what I kind of laid out there. And, you know, if you guys want to pray for me about this, I was still struggling. I was like, does anybody have any answers? I was looking for any, you know, anything God laid on somebody else's heart. Maybe you can't, maybe I'm not listening clearly. Maybe somebody else can see something I can't see. Nobody said, you know, they prayed for me about it. That's about it. Well, so I was still struggling with this, big time. And one night, that particular church had a Saturday night service. And they also had two Sunday services on Sunday mornings. I was in the congregation. And the song we were singing had nothing to do with anything God was telling me in my heart. I was just singing along, kind of maybe going through the motions, just kind of focusing on who God is. And there was this moment where there was a little bit of lax singing. There wasn't any singing. It was just a musical thing, just a few moments. And I heard God clearly say to me, he filled in the blank. He said, "You are mine." At that moment, nothing else mattered. Nothing else mattered. God was not going to define me by any of my abilities, anything I had achieved, anything I could do in life. He was defining me by the name he put on me, the name that cost him everything to put on me. When I heard that, I out loud, all I could respond with was, "And I am yours, and you are mine." That's all I could respond with. And that's all that's mattered ever since. Now, less than a week later, after I kind of picked myself up from that whole thing, it was not the answer I was expecting, by the way. I was expecting some kind of a calling. And it was a more powerful answer than anything I could have ever heard. I would have just run off and done that thing, whatever he would have told me. Yeah, you're an actuary. Okay, I'm going to go off and do that. whatever, you know, whatever you told me I was going to do. But you could have said you're a pastor, you're a missionary, whatever. I would have run off and done that. Belonging to him is something I can't run off and do. It's just something I am. And everything I do revolves around that. Not the other way around. Within a week, just then a few days later, my wife came home from work. She said, you need to listen to this. You need to watch this video. She told me about it. It was actually a TED Talk of all things, which I typically don't care for too much because they have a tendency to be a little bit woke and left-leaning kind of stuff. And I watched this thing, and it talked about this gal who was there, and she was a little bit off the, you know, she was off on the edge too. But she talked about the subject that she talked about. She didn't talk about, you know, anything political at all. She just talked about being a multi-potentialite. Now, she was a pretty young individual, and she had already discovered this about herself. The more she described this personality that she had, this multi-potentialite thing, the more I could relate to it. And the more I figured out, you know, this is the way I am. This is how I'm made. And it's okay. A multi-potentialite is a person who typically will learn something, learn a new skill. They become very good at it, or at least, you know, they get very focused and they get very disciplined and very almost infatuated with that skill and almost, you know, to the point where they get kind of obsessive about it. They learn everything that there is to learn about it, and they start to teach it even, in fact, and they become an expert to some degree in that thing. And then all of a sudden they lose interest in it and they just move on to the next thing. And it could be something completely, totally different. It has nothing to do with what they just did. And then the same thing happens over again. Now, if I told you all the things I've done in my life, and there are some people who listen to this who probably understand this, you would say, yep, that's what you do. I got piles of junk around my house of stuff that I've gotten into thinking I'm going to get back to it someday, and I never do because I'm off on the next thing. Now, there are some things that have stuck with me and some things I continue to do and some things I've gone back to. In fact, as I've gotten older, it's interesting how all these things start to kind of gel together and how you start seeing this purpose and everything that kind of happened through that whole thing. But it's especially the life skills and the people skills that you acquire to some degree, that seem to help you in the next venture. Things, some skills that you can pass on to other people. It's been interesting. It's been an interesting thing. But now, also within a week after that, of discovering this whole multi-potentialite thing, I discovered that there is a particular feast in the Jewish culture. And I'm not going to go into this whole thing. I'm not going to even talk about this much at all. But there is a phrase, I am my beloved's and he is mine, that is a part of that feast. I had no idea. Guess what day? When I look back at the calendar, guess what day that fell on? The Saturday night service at that time of the year happened to be at the same time that the sun was setting, which was the first day of that feast. Huh. What a coincidence. Talk about hammering something home, smacking you between the eyes with something like that. So you see, it's sometimes what God is trying to say to us. Is totally outside of our realm. Now, the one of the things that I've heard several times, you know, it hasn't even entered into the imagination of the mind of man what God is for us, what he's making for us, what we're going to see. Where, you know, you can't even describe what we're about to see. In the, what they call the next life. We can't even wrap our minds around it. We can't comprehend it. Our little brains can't comprehend it. And yet, we somehow think, that this AI technology, which is a culmination of all of humanity, is all it is. It's just scraping up everything that man is about. Almost like the Tower of Babel, if you want to think of it that way. Look how great man is. We're going to be a temple unto ourselves, kind of thing. And really all we're doing at that point is worshiping humanity. How great mankind is, or humans are. It's our own intelligence, really. And it's just a synthetic collage of our own thinking. Our own, quote, brilliance, if you want to call it that. And ultimately, it is going to reflect our selfishness. And it's going to take on that nature, if it's going to take on a nature at all. So there you go. That's my theory about artificial intelligence. It's a small, little, simple story. Trivial, you know, this little trivia for you there today on Wednesday. Nothing too heavy. Yeah, I wasn't planning on getting into a deep testimony this morning. I was going to talk about a few other things, but that's kind of where we're going with this whole AI thing, in my opinion. And it's, I don't know, like I was talking about this yesterday, a little bit, maybe it was Monday. How it kind of amazes me how obvious things are, where we're heading. As a society, as a global picture, with the technology that we have today and everything that's happening, it's very obvious to me where this is all leading. There is not going to be any stopping this. We could potentially slow it down. We can potentially hedge ourselves against it. And there may be waves of time where this ceases to, you know, it may, it, like waves on a beach, it kind of comes in and it comes back out, but at the tide eventually, the next roll of waves that come in a little bit more, and then the tide, you know, the waves kind of recede a little bit, but the tide is continuing to come in. It's kind of sneaky because we don't really, all we see is, you know, a section of waves that come in, they seem to be coming in. Well, then it recedes a little bit because the tide is still coming in, but the waves are just kind of coming in. So that's the kind of thing that we see in history as things start to change, as the tide starts to come in and things start to be overcome and our little castles that we formed in the sand start to get wiped out. We don't notice it encroaching, creeping in. But the tide is definitely moving in. Now, will we go around again on another round of tidal, you know, tidal currents, tidal seasons? I don't know. Maybe. I don't know. But I know the tide's coming in right now. Or from where we're at. Can we do anything to stem the tide? I don't know. It's only, well, God knows that. He's going to appoint the time of when it's going to be time for all this stuff to start happening. And we'll get into the whole thing of cyclical history and all that kind of stuff and how it will happen again. But that's where we're at. Now, on other notes, on the lighter side of things, let's talk about the war. That's a little bit lighter. There seems to be a never-ending commitment now to the war in Ukraine, and it continues to happen. This whole thing with Biden going over to Ukraine and ridiculous fawning over Biden. This is like Winston Churchill going over to. Now, if you watch the show of Biden stepping out into the and meeting Zelensky and all this stuff, and he's meeting, and all these people are, you know, these guards have their guns, they're pulling them up and all this stuff. There are sirens going off. Now, normally these would be called warning systems that are going off, meaning, you know, bombs are incoming. Take cover. Nobody's doing anything. They're standing around. They're still, the little ceremony's still going on. All these sirens are blaring. You talk about political theater here. This is absolutely unbelievable, in my opinion, the way they scripted all this stuff. Here comes Joe. He's going to come out and he's going to walk with Zelensky. And you notice the way Joe walks compared to the way Zelensky walks. Joe's trying to walk. He's very, very careful with his steps because he has a hard time walking because of his cognitive ability. And he's struggling with that whole process. You can just tell he's struggling with it. And these stupid sirens are going off to make it seem more dramatic because we're in a war zone. Oh, sirens are going off. And you know somebody did that. The door opens, the sirens go off. And nobody takes cover. Nobody's running around. Oh, we're under attack. Because they're not really under attack. That was just all a show. I have to even wonder if he was even in Ukraine. This whole thing could have been happening in Poland, for all we know. Supposedly he went into Ukraine on a train. I don't know if any of you have ever ridden on a train before or not. I don't know how you protect a train. Trains take a while. Trains aren't fast. Just put it that way. And Joe one day is in Poland, and the next day he's all of a sudden he's in Ukraine. Now, I don't know, folks. All I can tell you is something doesn't smell right about this whole thing, especially the way the news is fawning all over it. They're slobbering and drooling all over Joe Biden, how wonderful he is, and what this is such a big event now going on. So anyway, there's a fellow running for president. Let's go on to what's happening here with Trump and some other things. Trump has been a little bit of a I'm not sure what his strategy is here. Hopefully he has one. I would not be doing what he's doing right now. He seems to have become obsessed with DeSantis. He's falling into this trap. The media is trying to pit him against DeSantis. DeSantis hasn't even said he's going to run. Now, there is a group of people, there is an organization trying to draft him into running. I'm not sure how that works, but they're trying to do that. They're raising money. Now, please send your money to draft DeSantis into, I guess they can do that. I don't know. Is it legal? I don't know. They're apparently getting donations. There, however, is another guy who apparently is running, and he just announced his running on Fox News yesterday, I believe it was. See where it is here. What's the guy's name? Let's see what we get here. This guy, what's the guy's name? I'm going to look it up here real quick. Okay, Donald Trump, Trump, Nikki Haley, former president, blah, blah, blah. There's got to be more than that. Here it is. It comes in here, Fox News, cuts away. Nikki Haley, where is the guy? It was just a couple days ago, yesterday or the day before. Yeah, of course, it's not anywhere now to be found. See if I can filter this out to the most recent. This week. Let's just put this week. Yeah, it's all Nikki Haley. Yeah, there's a guy. There's a guy that's he's a billionaire, I believe, as well. He's a millionaire, billionaire, something. He has announced now that he's running on Fox, and he's the things he's saying. I have to say I agree with about 99% of everything he said. What the guys, of course, it's all Nikki Haley on the results here. Now, down the lawn, apparently there's some trouble surrounding this whole thing. Nikki Haley is playing the race card. She's playing the woke card now. She claims she's not white. Yeah, look at her. Yeah, she doesn't look anything like a white lady. Of course, she's a female, and you know, when you kick back, it hurts a lot more with heels when you're wearing heels. I just, that kind of rhetoric, I'm sorry, you've lost me already. I don't like it. I hate that. It's just, okay, again, put yourself in the shoes of a white man. If a white man said something that was pro-white man, he'd be canceled for life. But it's okay because she's a woman. And this whole thing about not being white, she's not a white woman. She said it in her ad. She said it when she announced. She put this whole thing out there. She's apparently Indian and something else. She's got some kind of mixed background. And I'm not talking Native American Indian. I think she's actually, her parents are from India, I believe. I don't know. All I know is this lady is establishment through and through. It's now better than Biden. Absolutely, she'd be better than Biden. But not so sure that's, you know, I'm not sure where we're going with that bar. That bar is pretty low. Now, this guy that was he actually looks like he's from India. He was talking sense. He was pretty passionate. And I have to say, I don't know. The guy kind of surprised me. When I first saw it, I was like, oh, yeah, whatever. Now, I'm not giving up on Trump. I think Trump has a score to settle, and I would like to see him settle it with the deep state. I would like to see him go after them because he knows what he's doing there. I don't think anybody else is going to do that. Not the way he would do it. And it needs to be done. Now, this guy's talking, so this other guy, Vivint or whatever his name is, I don't. See if I can find it here. Vivek. That was his name. Vivek. There it is. Vivek Ramaswamy. This guy. It's apparently running. Announces he's running for president. So it's just last night. And he does not agree with what happened in 2020. He has been canceled. He's been all kinds of things that he's doing. And you know what? I believe he could give Trump a run for his money if he is actually as genuine as what he's talking like. Now, I'm looking at some pictures of him, and I see a lot of pictures where he has purple tie on. Now, the purple tie is sometimes a sign. Now, he's wearing a red tie every place else I see him. I see Trump in some purple ties once in a while as well, but that's not always. But occasionally he wears these purple tie things. The purple tie kind of started after Hillary lost in 2016. They came out the next day, everybody wearing purple, because that was supposed to be a blend of red and blue. well, we're going to work together now. We're going to try to work together. And that was the only thing. They were showing that they're always willing to work together now, working on compromise when they lose. They never do that when they win. If you recall how Obama treated John McCain when they came in for their first big joint meeting, all televised. Well, we're going to work together. Well, you guys, you know, you lost the election. So, you know, elections have consequences. That's when we first started hearing that, was when Obama won the first time in 2008. This is all we heard about. Well, you lost. So we're not going to listen to you anymore. They started steamrolling and railroading, not working with the other side. Not as far as actually working with anybody with any kind of agenda on the right. And hence we started seeing the molding of the establishment and the uniparty system. Yeah. Well, you have to compromise to get anything done. Well, sometimes getting something done, just in the name of getting something done, maybe it doesn't need to be done. Maybe it needs to be done as in done and over. Especially with the way. Anyway. So, yeah, I'll move on. We have that stuff going on. Now, I want to talk about how interestingly enough, the president goes to Ukraine, pledges all this money to help out. There is no, seemingly almost no interest at all in what's going on in East Palestine, Indiana, Ohio. Yeah, it's not in Indiana. And yet that it continues to be an issue. The media now is just ignoring it because it's a blemish, in my opinion, on the current administration. They know it. They're trying to blame it on everybody else. Now, every time I see a headline come across splash across my news feed on YouTube, it is always from MSNBC. It always has Trump's name in it, all the time. And here's something that's really weird too. I hardly ever click on an MSNBC or CNN video. Hardly ever. And yet, almost every video I click on YouTube, whether it's news or not, it doesn't even have to be news. Almost always, the very first suggestion that they have down for me in the videos below, it's almost always an MSNBC video. And it's almost always something derogatory towards Trump or Fox News. It just amazes me how that works. For instance, let's see here. What's this one here? This is, okay, here's, I'm going to go to subscriptions. So let's do a little experiment here. Of course, it's going to take forever. Go to subscriptions, and we're going to go to, let's see here. YouTube is the only safe haven for AI takeover. What? Right. Yeah. I don't think so, because they're actually, AI has become a creativity thing now. It's kind of a weird deal. What is that S down there for? What does that do for you? I don't know what that's on some of these videos for. Oh, it's a short. That's what it is. All right, let's look at this. Here's one. This is a guy teaching voiceover stuff. Let's just click on this. I'm going to go ahead and turn that off so you can't see it. But let's find out what the I don't want the video to play. I'm going to go down here and look at the suggested videos here. So this is a video about voiceover work. It's by Bill DeWeese, an awesome guy, awesome teacher, good instructor. The very first video down here is actually Fox News, Aaron Brockovich. This is a nightmare. It's about 6 days ago. It's a six-day-old video about Aaron Brockovich, what she's talking about with what's going on in Ohio. The rise of corporate fascism. After they got a couple of them there from Bill, and then they got this other one about the rise of corporate fascism. And another one, a couple more from Bill, and then actually Fox News again. Surprisingly, Fox News. They probably heard me talking about it. Jesse Lee Peterson. Got another one from Sigma. Michael Knowles. A couple others. Yeah, here we go. Sky News Australia. Surprisingly enough, there's nothing on here from MSNBC. Not that one wasn't. Yeah, I'm very shocked, actually. I'm very shocked and amazed that there's nothing on here. So my experiment did not work. It proved me wrong because they probably heard me talking about it. But this is the kind of stuff that happened. Oh, what was that? There's this really interesting conversation that was accidentally caught on a phone or a camera of some kind. Somebody got a hold of this thing and put it out there. It is Nancy Pelosi's daughter talking about January 6th and how the whole thing crumbles to pieces because they know it's a fraud. And they're saying in this video, they're talking about it, about how it's a fraud. There wasn't an insurrection. They just have to keep calling it that. It was amazing to me. It should be frontline headline news. Of course, now as they go through this whole January 6th commission thing, it's going to be interesting because all the rats are starting to flee the ship. And they're turning on each other. So it'll be really interesting to see that. Now, having said all that, I just realized the show has been going on for an hour. And I realize it's been a long show. So folks, as I go through my day and as you go through your day, I think we need to continue to be mindful of what God is calling us to, but who he is calling us to be, first and foremost, and that is we are his. Celebrate that today, because that is certainly something to celebrate. And the price he paid for that is way beyond any price any of us could ever afford. So, once again, folks, pray for each other, pray for our nation, pray for our leaders, and we will get through this whole thing together in one piece. God bless everybody. Have a great day.